It's fall 1971, and something weird's going on inside Miller's Milwaukee headquarters. McCann Erickson advertising guru Bill Backer is in the office of the brewery's new president, John Murphy. Backer stares in disbelief. Murphy, a burly New Yorker, is grinning and bobbing side to side in his chair.
Bill, come take a look at this.
Backer walks behind the desk and looks down. Murphy's cleaning his shoes on a rug under his desk. The rug is emblazoned with the Anheuser-Busch logo, a giant letter A, and a bald eagle. Murphy winks at Backer.
See, I can wipe my feet on Anheuser-Busch every day. It also reminds me of my mission.
Which is?
Make Miller number one.
Backer raises an eyebrow. Miller is America's seventh biggest brewery, but it's way behind industry leader Anheuser-Busch. Miller's market share is just 4%. The home of Budweiser owns 18%. The company would need to spend hundreds of millions of dollars building new plants just to be able to produce as much beer as Anheuser-Busch, let alone sell it. But Miller does have one big advantage. Its new owner, tobacco giant Philip Morris. 2 years ago, Philip Morris paid $220 million to get full ownership of Miller. Now, it plans to use its cigarette millions and the same marketing strategy that made Marlboro the world's best-selling smokes to make Miller king. Murphy used to run Philip Morris's international operations and is one of the company's high flyers. Foot rug antics over, Murphy gets down to business, and that means appealing to the average Joe. They make up 30% of beer drinkers, but they consume 80% of beer.
Bill, I need your help. The marketing for High Life is terrible. Those young blue-collar workers, they're our market. We need a campaign that'll take High Life out of the champagne bucket and put it into the lunch bucket without spilling a drop.
Murphy knows it's a big ask, winning over a completely new audience for a brand that hasn't changed since 1907. But if anyone can do it, it's Backer. After all, he's the advertising legend behind Coca-Cola's recent ad, "I'd like to buy the world a Coke." Miller needs a landmark campaign like that. For more than a century, Miller has been stuck in the minor leagues. What Murphy's banking on is that Anheuser-Busch won't see Miller coming at them. Not until it's too late.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. On the last episode, Anheuser-Busch reclaimed pole position from its big post-war rival Schlitz. But now, Schlitz is making inroads with an aggressive strategy rooted in the belief it's not taste that sells beer, it's image. And Philip Morris is pouring millions of dollars into Miller Brewing so it can bring down the House of Budweiser. This is Episode 3. It's Miller Time. It's summer 1972, and McCann Erickson ad guru Bill Backer is back in Milwaukee. About a dozen Miller executives are gathered around a conference table, gazing at a blank projection screen. Backer's here to show off the first TV commercials designed to give High Life blue-collar appeal. As a colleague loads the film reel onto the projector, Backer sets the scene. For young blue-collar guys, a cold beer after clocking out is their reward for a hard day's work. It's the time when they kick back, hang with friends, and forget their worries. We are going to make that time Miller time. Backer signals to his colleague to start the projector. The Miller executives lean forward as the screen shows construction workers in hard hats finishing their shift against the backdrop of a magnificent orange sunset. And then, as the workers head to the bar for a round of High Lifes, the music starts.
If you've got the time,
when the film stops, the executives applaud. Miller boss John Murphy bounces up from his chair and starts shaking hands with the ad team.
Guys, what can I say? You nailed it.
A few weeks later, the Miller Time ads hit the airwaves. Miller pushes them hard, spending millions of dollars to get them in front of TV viewers across the nation. And sales of High Life don't budge at all. And by the end of the year, the campaign looks like a dud. Rumors fly around the industry grapevine that Murphy's going to get fired. And Anheuser-Busch chief Gussie Bush is feeling smug about Miller's misfire. When Philip Morris first bought Miller, Gussie's son August Bush III freaked out. He tried to convince his 72-year-old father to attack Miller instead of Schlitz. But Gussie ignored him. And he's now surer than ever he made the right move. His 35-year-old son still has a lot to learn. Because while Miller's struggling to take off, the threat from Schlitz is growing. Schlitz is spending less on ingredients and using the savings on its aggressive multi-million-dollar ad campaigns while cutting the price of beer. And sales are growing. It's January 1973, and hundreds of Anheuser-Busch salespeople and wholesalers are filing into the lavish Art Deco Theater of the Houston Music Hall. They're here for the company's annual sales convention, and most of them are nursing hangovers from the previous night's entertainment, a concert by the multi-platinum pop duo, The Carpenters. But beneath the convention's celebratory surface, there's an undercurrent of fear. Schlitz's onslaught and growing market share has everyone in the convention hall spooked. So when Gussie Bush shuffles onto the stage, they're all hoping he's going to reveal some big plan to halt the Schlitz blitzkrieg. At the podium, Bush puts down his walking cane and leans into the microphone.
In recent months, a lot of people have been telling me you should do what Schlitz is doing. They reckon we should cut back on quality to save millions of dollars. Well, I've got one word for them. Never!
The audience claps excitedly, but many are secretly disappointed by his sticking-to-our-guns message.
Quality is our lifeblood. We'll keep using the best ingredients. We'll keep our 30-day Beechwood aging process. Cutting corners is the road to ruin, not victory. And that reminds me, we made a film about Schlitz, just for you.
The lights in the music hall go down, and Tonight Show star Ed McMahon appears on screen above Gussie's head. McMahon's wearing a white shirt and tie, standing next to a brewing vat.
Hello, everyone. I'm the new brewmaster at Schlitz.
Gussie smiles as the audience boos and hisses. Next, a homeless guy joins McMahon and empties a backpack full of dirty laundry into the brewing vat. McMahon looks at the camera and smiles.
Now that ought to give it some gusto.
They laugh at the dig at Schlitz's famous slogan about having real gusto. But it doesn't shake their underlying concerns. Why is Gussie refusing to respond to Schlitz's attack? And they're about to get another rival to worry about, too. It's summer 1973, and Miller President John Murphy is on his way to meet the market research team. Fresh from reading the latest sales reports, he's almost skipping down the corridor of the brewery's executive floor in Milwaukee. The news is clear. The Miller Time ad campaign is finally working. Murphy never gave up on Miller Time. Instead of axing the seemingly ineffectual campaign, he held his nerve and kept pumping money into the promotion. Now, his faith is paying off. High Life sales are up almost 30%, attracting the blue-collar fans across America they've been going after. With High Life on the up and up, Murphy is ready to focus on part two of his attack on Anheuser-Busch. A year ago, Miller bought the rights to an unpopular low-calorie beer called Light from troubled Chicago brewer Meisterbrau. To most people in the brewing business, diet beer seems like a dumb idea. They reckon blue-collar guys don't want to look like they've jumped on their wives' weight loss plans. But Murphy's hunch is that with the right message, low-calorie beer could be huge. Trouble is, a hunch isn't enough. Murphy knows that Philip Morris does not launch products on a hunch. Everything must be thoroughly market-tested. He settles into his marketing research meeting, hoping to hear some good news about Light. But Murphy's happy outlook is fading as the head of research keeps talking.
What all our focus tests underline is that the core beer drinker doesn't want to be seen drinking a low-calorie beer. They worry that their friends will make fun of them. They believe low-calorie beer tastes bad and is for wimps and women.
Murphy cuts in.
This is old news. We knew this 18 months ago. Have you learned anything else at all?
The research chief pauses for a moment.
Well, there was this, anomaly. A car manufacturing town in Indiana called Anderson. The blue-collar guys we talked to there liked Light.
Murphy's eyes widen. Now this is more like it. He flicks his half-smoked Marlboro in the ashtray and leans forward.
Well, what did they tell you? Why did they like Light?
They said they liked it because it tasted great and was less filling.
Less filling?
Yeah. And they told us that because it was less filling, they can drink more.
A huge smile breaks across Murphy's face. This is the golden nugget of marketing insight he's been after.
Yes! Yes, that's it.
The research team looks at their boss, confused.
Don't you see? Everyone has been promoting low-calorie beer by saying it's good for you. It won't expand your belly. Well, by casting Light as less filling, we can sell it as the beer that lets you drink more.
After the meeting, Murphy calls McCann Erickson and asks them to start dreaming up an ad campaign that brings home this very point. By early 1974, everything's in place. Miller's brewmasters have created a Light recipe that tests well with drinkers, and the company's breweries and canning plants are primed and ready to start producing Light. Over the next few months, Miller begins introducing Light in select markets, leading with ads starring former New York Jets running back Matt Snell.
But imagine a great tasting beer that's less filling. And at 6'3", 230, there's a lot of me to fill.
Come on!
New Light, everything you always wanted in a beer, and less.
The reaction is huge. In every area where Miller puts Light on sale, it sells fast. Miller's tapped into something no other brewer has. It's single-handedly defining the light beer category. Murphy scraps his plan for a slow, careful rollout and orders Light to go nationwide in January 1975. He gives his marketing team a $10 million advertising budget for the launch, an unheard-of amount for a new beer. And by the time it goes national, McCann Erickson also produces a new round of ads where sports celebrities like former NBA referee Mindy Rudolph and Boston Celtics coach Tom Heinsohn debate Light's qualities.
But the best part is that it tastes so great.
The best part is it's less filling.
Nah, it tastes great.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Less filling. Less filling. You know even less about beer than basketball.
That's it, Heinsohn. You're out of the bar.
Miller's sales are soaring. At this rate, Miller will overtake Pabst and Colorado-based Coors to become America's third largest brewer within a couple of years. In St. Louis, Missouri, August Bush III, heir to the Budweiser throne, is watching all this unfold with growing alarm. August III believes Anheuser-Busch must act and act fast to stop Miller's rise. But he also feels his father is just too set in his ways to make the necessary bold moves. So, with Gussie showing no willingness to abdicate, August III figures there's only one solution. He's going to have to shove his old man off the throne. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. It's an early Saturday morning in January 1975, and Gussie Bush is sitting in the kitchen of his grand mansion with the blinds closed. He pours himself another glass of gin and knocks it back. It's barely 8 a.m. The Anheuser-Busch chief has been in this state for weeks. A month ago, his 8-year-old daughter, Tina, died after a horrific car crash. Gussie's devastated. Of all his 10 children, Tina was his favorite. He barely turns up at headquarters, and when he does, he cannot focus. Instead, he spends most days sitting alone with tears in his eyes, drinking himself into oblivion. But Gussie isn't the only Bush up early this Saturday morning. 30 miles northwest from Gussie's mansion, his son August Bush III is holding court in his farmhouse residence. With him are his inner circle, the band of MBAs and young executives who owe him their jobs They're there most Saturdays at 6:30 a.m. They call themselves the Dawn Patrol, and they plot how Anheuser-Busch will change once Gussie's passed away and the reign of August the 3rd begins. As they sit around a large mahogany table, one of the executives brings up the Teamsters Union.
I reckon they'll cause trouble once Gussie's gone. They'll want to test the waters, you know, to see how the new regime reacts. I think we should plan for that.
August the 3rd nods in agreement.
Yes, it will be about who blinks first. We need to start building an inventory of beer so we can ride out any strike.
As the Dawn Patrol discusses the strategy, August the 3rd watches them with his icy blue eyes. Maybe, he thinks, maybe now is the time to tell them his plan.
There's something you all need to know. I've decided Gussie must go as soon as possible. Miller's growing too quickly to wait any longer. I'm going to start getting the board members on my side.
The Dawn Patrol all nod in agreement. They feel Gussie's refusal to walk away has made this inevitable. One of the team even looks relieved by the decision.
Good. It's about time we forced this issue.
It's May 1975, and in St. Louis, it's high noon in the Anheuser-Busch boardroom. August the 3rd looks at his watch. Gussie will be here soon. He looks up at the nervous board members sitting around the table. Men who have been loyal to his father for years. Men who have promised August the 3rd that today they will push his father aside. But talk is cheap. The question is, will the board really stick the knife into Gussie when they're face to face with the man himself? August the 3rd looks out the narrow window in the boardroom door. He catches a glimpse of the doctor he's put on standby just in case the stress of this meeting gives his father a heart attack. And then he sees Gussie hobbling towards the door on his two walking canes, his leathery face full of thunder. Gussie learned last night that his future as CEO would be on the line at this meeting. Gussie hauls himself into the boardroom, and one of the board members helps him into his chair. He looks up, acknowledging each board member, one by one. Then he looks at August the 3rd, his eyes full of fury and disappointment. His son stares back with a determined look in his eyes, and neither one says a word. The board member chairing the meeting finally breaks the hostile silence.
We should begin. Gussie, before we vote, is it correct that you are opposing the motion to make August the 3rd chief executive?
Gussie gives the board member an "Are you stupid?" look.
Of course I'm opposing the motion. I built this company into the biggest brewery on earth, not him.
Gussie is shaken, but he still believes he can win. But one by one, the board members who've loyally backed him for years raise their hands in support of his son's coup. As the last board member casts his vote for August the 3rd, Gussie explodes.
You gutless swines! You traitors!
Seething with uncontrollable rage, he jabs a finger in the direction of one of the men.
And you! I thought you were my friend, damn it!
Unsteadily, Gussie gets to his feet and grabs his walking canes. A board member rises to help him, only to face Gussie's wrath.
Don't you dare! I needed your help 5 minutes ago. Your help is useless now. Get out of my way.
Gussie stumbles out of the door and heads down the corridor to the elevator as fast as he can. 10 minutes later, August the 3rd enters the nearby conference room where the Dawn Patrol has been waiting. There's not a flicker of emotion on his face.
It's done. He's gone. I'm in charge now. Now let's go kill Miller and Schlitz.
On the next episode, August the 3rd goes to war. Schlitz goes down in flames. And Miller seeks help from the feds.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars. Quick note about the conversations in this episode. We can't know exactly what was said, but this dialogue is based on our best research. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Emily Frost and Donna Hyams edited this story. Our editor and producer is Jenny Lauer Beckman, sound designed by Bay Area Sound. Our executive producer is Marshall Louis, created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Once upon a beat.
Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.